Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our patrons, this is your extended ad-free version of this week's show. If you're not yet a patron but would like to become one, we're going to talk about that shortly. You can do so by going to patreon.com/UK Tech. Now, I've got a long list of names I just want to get through here, Ian. New patrons or people who have moved to some of our new tiers, which we announced this week, they include, I'm going to do this in one breath, Rich Underwood, Peter Hope, Martin Gear, Stephen, Brian Creevy, Neil Fisher, Matt Dawson-Jones, Jane, Matt Cottam, Daniel Wilkinson, Mike Gilmore, Raphael, Philip D, Al Struthers, Steve Norton, Jamie. Actually, I could have done that with a slightly lower intake of breath. But thank you all for either joining us or moving to one of our new tiers. Now, everyone will know we have a bunch of new tiers. I'm not going to go over it too much now on the show, but we are doing an extra show every week, a very different type of show, much more personal show, between our main episodes that's available on one of our new Patreon tiers. So if you would like to get hold of that, you'll hear about that in the special episode that's in your RSS feed now.
Anyone subscribe to the £100 I'll be sweary at them tier?
I never made one, so no.
Shame.
No, not really. But you can find all of those details at patreon.com/UK Tech. Thank you very much. Now, Ian, it is time to get your umbrella out because it is about to rain some very serious news.
Okay.
Everyone else, though...
Umbrella extended.
Good. Parents, I would say, just be aware that we are about to talk about the UK's new pornography age check rule for websites. We are going to be tasteful, but no doubt we are also going to be opinionated. So if you're listening in a school, or if you have young kids around, you don't want them to hear some risque terms or topics, I would suggest skipping forward maybe just a few minutes, or perhaps listening on headphones. An age check scheme designed to stop under 18s viewing pornographic websites will come into force on the 15th of July in the UK. This is according to the BBC this week. And from that date, affected sites, and that's those that have a third or more of their content being pornographic in nature, they will have to verify the age of UK visitors, and if they fail to comply, they will face being blocked by internet service providers. Now, there's a lot to unpack here. It's a big onion to peel. Let's start with the good intentions. This is to prevent young people stumbling across pornography online. Minister for Digital Margot James said there's, quote, a need to protect children from inappropriate content. And that's fair. The British Board of Film Classification. Now, this is the group that gives movies their UK age certificates. It will be responsible for deciding what websites need to put up an age check gate. And the BBC said that the BBFC, and they're not connected, will instruct internet service providers which sites and apps to block for non-compliance of those age gate demands. In addition, it can also call on payment service providers to pull support and ask search engines and advertisers to shun an offending business. Now, I thought it might be worthwhile, particularly for some of our overseas listeners, to just explain a little bit about what the BBFC is. It is the British Board of Film Classification. We have established that, I believe. It's independent, it's non-governmental, and it's non-profit. I didn't realise how old it was. It's been classifying films since 1912. Do you want to know what happened in 1912?
Like, literally the first film? Or
well,
something?
Lots of things happened, but the Titanic set sail.
Ah, right.
You know, that's how long the BBFC has been in existence for. But today it covers things like video on demand services and stuff like that as well, as too. Now, I do believe it's a body of very well-intentioned individuals who watch uncut versions of films and then tell the distributors of those films whether they're allowed to give them general release on DVD or in cinemas, and if so, with what age rating. But it makes some pretty odd decisions to me when it comes to sexual content in particular. For example, it allows a 1970s film called Pretty Baby, which is on its website. They've got some case studies of interesting decisions they've made to contain scenes of a fully naked 12-year-old Brooke Shields to appear in her role as a child prostitute and allow the film to be passed into general sale. It also allows a film called Irreversible, which contains a vicious, uninterrupted 10-minute rape scene, uncut, into cinemas. And it always made me wonder, with that example in particular, you know, would 5 minutes have not got the same point across in a world, bear in mind, in a world where the BBFC has also sometimes demanded literally a few seconds of footage be cut from a film, for example, because someone looked a bit too happy punching someone else in the face, as was requested when Fight Club was being rated. And I don't know. It's not my area of expertise. I'm not trying to judgment. It's just, to me, as an observer of what the body does, there are some things that seem a little bit disjointed.
Well, I will just say that that has a lot to do with the intended audience. So, I mean, a lot of when you're releasing a film, you'll go into the BBFC process with a rating that you'd like to have in mind. So what tends to happen is, you know, like a superhero movie like, I don't know,
Avengers.
Perhaps, yeah. They will go in with that wanting a relatively low rating, the lowest they can achieve, because they'll want the most number of people to see it. And comic violence is viewed very differently. You know, robots hitting each other, as an example, I mean, obviously that's not a good Avengers example, isn't the same as people hitting each other and drawing blood. And also there's lots of that. But so a lot of those reasons will come down to the intended audience. So, you know, that rape scene sounds horrible, and I can't understand why anyone would want to watch that. But I also understand that there might be some artistic reason for it. You know,
we're not film critics, and I agree. No. There are justifications and all sorts of things on the web, on the BBFC's website, and I do recommend reading it. They've got a brilliant archive of some of the more, you know, controversial decisions they've made about various different films. It does make for good reading. But the fact is, you know, it's not a specialist organization when it comes to pornography, and it bans, you know, this is something else that I found quite recently, it bans scenes of female ejaculation in commercial pornography. It has, yes, done since 2014, but it allows a 10-minute rape scene to pass into cinemas without a cut. And it's just, I mean, I'll get off my soapbox, but those two things feel to me to be a little bit...
Yeah, but also, I think you're talking, when you're talking about that, what did you say? Is it, because you're not, in an 18-rated film, you're not allowed to see an erect penis.
You are.
Are you?
Oh, yes.
Oh. But there is also a separate rating.
Yes, R18.
Yeah, which is for sex films.
And that means it has to be filmed in sex shops, but there are many things that you can't include even in those. And that is one of them.
But that is essentially completely pointless now. I mean, there is literally no reason for any of that legislation to exist. I mean, it is beyond stupid, because the internet means that even if you don't watch...
No. Because if you are commercially producing it for sale, like video on demand on the web in the UK, you are subject to that same rule. You're not allowed to show those things.
Yeah, that's working really well for them.
Anyway, this underscores a big part of the issue, is that this is the body that is deciding what sites should be classed as pornographic and what shouldn't. And I just think that with all of these questions around, you could just do with a more focused, maybe specialist body, maybe you bring a different type of person in, and maybe they will. But that's just a concern that I have. So there's that side of things. The next problem with the porn law is proving your age. I mean, one of the ways will be to upload a scan of your passport or driving license to a company called MindGeek, which will have the authenticity of your scans verified by a third party. Had you heard of MindGeek?
Yes, because I've been looking into this since it was announced.
Okay, so fine. Well, I actually hadn't heard of MindGeek. I thought it was the same as ThinkGeek, which is
the online store for... Yeah. Geek merch.
So I did a bit of research. Now, their website says their mission is, quote, to deliver a world-class portfolio of entertainment experiences and IT solutions to a global customer base, utilizing our expertise to drive innovation and build new solutions exceeding customer expectations. That's a very boring, dry explanation of an IT company, right?
Yeah.
So far, so dull. But you might recognize some of the companies that MindGeek owns. Pornhub. YouPorn. Brazzers, RedTube. Basically, it runs a lot of porn sites. Now, certainly I've got no issues with MindGeek as a company, but A, just seems a bit weird to have one of the biggest porn companies in the world be the middleman between your passport scans and an identity checker.
Yes.
And B, if you quickly Googled MindGeek to check it was legit, having been told you need to submit a passport, you know, for proof of ID or something, a casual observer may only see it as an IT services provider and not feel concerned that maybe, just maybe, there's a possibility that someone somewhere is able to put your sexual preferences in a document against your passport details and home address.
Now, can I just briefly interject here to explain that MindGeek strenuously denies that that's a thing? So what they're proposing is that Age ID is what the service is going to be called.
Yeah.
They are saying that they will verify details, but they will not keep details or records of who a person is. So the actual details of it aren't completely known because Age ID isn't available in the UK yet. It has launched. It is operational in Germany. But what they say they'll do is that they will verify your age and then dispose of all the irrelevant material. So what you'll be left with is essentially an Age ID and a password. And then you'll be able to log into any site with an Age ID verification. Now, that service is free. And of course, there isn't a way for us to be sure that they're doing what they say they're doing. And if you're logging in with Age ID to, say, a MindGeek-owned site, there's probably not a lot to stop them from tying those two things together. But if they're doing as they say and discarding all the personal information and just giving you an ID, then perhaps that won't be a problem. We'd have to take it on trust.
Even with 100% trust and whatever with any company, I would not want to send a scan of my passport to a company that's associated with that or any kind of it. I mean, I wouldn't want to send it into pretty much any company. I wouldn't want to send it into Netflix. I wouldn't want I wouldn't want to send it into Amazon. You know, it's not specifically because it's porn. Porn makes it, you know, much more personal, as if it was like medical. But I wouldn't feel very comfortable doing it.
Well, nor should you, because I don't think that this whole thing is being done sensitively. Sexuality is a minefield. There are people all over the world are killed for their, you know, the way they were born, you know, because of what they want to do and who they want to be with. That's not perhaps so much of a problem in the UK, but that's not to say, I mean, we, you know, there are things like honour killings in this country. You know, if you're of a community and they find out that you're acting in a way that they don't agree with, then there can be horrible repercussions. If this information leaks out, not only could it result in people being the victim of those kind of things, it could also result in suicides. If it somehow transpires that, you know, you happen to be gay and you're looking at gay porn and then someone finds out, you know, and you're not ready to come out for whatever reason, then it could be catastrophic.
And I want to be very mindful that we're talking here worst case scenarios, but they're based on things that have happened in the past.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole thing stinks from top to bottom.
Well, you're getting to my final conclusion here, because the words that I was going to say is that the whole thing is entirely pointless anyway, because any bans that an ISP puts on a website can be circumvented perfectly legally using a VPN. Plus, the government itself has said, according to the BBC write-up, that age verification is not a silver bullet solution, but rather a means to make it less likely that children stumble across unsuitable material online. But are kids accidentally stumbling on Pornhub? You know, or are they typing it in and going to it? And if they're going to accidentally stumble across porn, it's going to be on things like Twitter and WhatsApp or Tumblr, none of which are covered by this rule because a third of their content won't be pornographic.
One of the best tweets I saw about this as well was because it's a third of the content. Someone said all Pornhub needs to do to be compliant and not have Age ID is to commission 3 written articles about a non-porn subject for every video they upload.
The bottom line is that it is not a bad thing to want to prevent kids from stumbling across things that could be harmful, but this is a very, very old-fashioned way.
No, but could I just counter this and say that actually the government says this is to prevent children from stumbling across porn.
Yes.
I don't believe them. I believe that it's a method of control. They want to have control. Now, they don't understand technology. It is obvious to me, with this more than anything else that they've stupid ideas that they've proposed, this is the clearest indication that they don't understand technology, because you've got VPNs. Now, VPNs have a slight barrier in that you usually have to pay for them, so that's not going to appeal to children. However, Tor is completely free and will absolutely, more than likely, as long as your exit point isn't in the UK, which it probably wouldn't be, will absolutely get you round the porn block without you need to install any other software. You'll be good to go. Not only that, but we are on the cusp, because Google and Mozilla are both pushing for encrypted DNS, mm-hmm. we are on the cusp of a porn block not working, because there will be no way for the porn block, an ISP, to know what site you're visiting. It will blow all that out of the water. It will also blow out all the Pirate Bay prevention, stuff yep. like that. You know, and you can use encrypted DNS now if you want, like the free Cloudflare service, 1.1.1.1, it has apparently got a secure DNS thing. Now, this is not for the faint-hearted. It's quite difficult to implement unless you're not an expert, but unless you have a reasonable technical knowledge. So technology is going to defeat this in a heartbeat. Anyone who is looking to share porn or see porn is going to have absolutely no problem seeing it. Therefore, essentially what we're doing is we're spending huge amounts of public money on making the BBFC, the company, the organisation, which is probably least suitable to do this job, in that I don't think they have the manpower. I've been watching their site for a list of age-verified services that they approve. There is still not one. There wasn't one when the last deadline for this passed, and I suspect there's probably not going to be one anytime soon. So we have this service that's supposed to be, you know, this restriction that's coming in, yet there's no way for anyone to prepare for it. There's no way for you to get, you know, if in the best case scenario, you're someone who doesn't care about, you know, having to go into a shop and buy a porn pass for £6 or whatever it is.
And you can do that. That is one of the other options,
yeah,
is to go into a shop and
it's
buy
called
it.
A Portas card, I believe, or something like that. Although when I read there is a Wired article that I read that suggests that some part of that card is tied to the Age ID service, and I haven't actually been able to verify that, but I will be looking into this at some point. And again, we're essentially giving away this system to MindGeek, because they're the ones with the money. And also, it is a tangentially involved point, but Age ID is free for users. However, the way it works is that porn producers are expected to pay for each verification that goes through their site. This is my understanding. It's a matter of some 40 cents or something per person. And so this also has an impact on people who are, I don't know, they're either providing porn services, but on a smaller scale. Or it could be that if say, you are a site that gives sex information to people, and say the BBFC comes along and goes, actually, you've got to be behind this Age ID thing, then what you're doing is you're going to make that impossible. I can see the possibility that services that are designed to help people questioning their sexuality or whatever the, you know, advice, if they somehow manage to fall into that category, then they're going to be essentially pushed out of business. And I, like all of these services, like every time this happens, it's never the thing that they say it is, and the unintended consequences of it will be devastating for certain people and groups and businesses. And it's like the extreme porn thing, you know. It was the government coming along and going, which was part of the same bill, as I remember. They've struck it off now, haven't they? But, you know, they said, you can't watch this, 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 and this, because we think this is unsuitable. Ignoring the fact that porn is a acted thing. It is a consensual thing that is smoke and mirrors. But they were saying that because of, you know, certain sensibilities, there was some stuff that was unacceptable. But, of course, you know, if you happen to be in a marginal minority or whatever, you know, just happens that to be your thing, you would feel very hard done by, and the same problems came up. But the thing's a disaster, and it will continue to be a disaster.
Or might it? That's the opposing view.
Well, I'd love to hear from someone who has that opposing view, actually. I would be very interested to hear, especially maybe teachers, or especially anyone who has an insight into how young people do this, and if you've, you know, caught people looking at porn on their phones or whatever, how they're getting access to it. I'd be very interested to hear about real world stories. But we'll have to wait and see. It's sensitive.
Stephen Huxtable did point out that BBFC does consult with the public and tries to reflect the expectations and worries of parents. Absolutely.
Yeah. I will say this about the BBFC. When it comes to films, they are very good. Their advice is actually useful to parents. It's a really good service. But they're not set up for this, really. I mean, I know they do porn aging, but not in the, as we just discussed, not in a way that's relevant to an internet audience.
Any thoughts you have on this, of course, very, very welcome. hello@techpodcast.uk. Well, Ian, Lush is stepping away from social channels in the UK. You know Lush, right?
I do.
They're the cosmetic shop you can smell from a mile off.
Purveyors of bath bombs and the like.
Indeed, we'll come back to those. The Drum reported last week, when I was ill in bed with a lung infection, that they will now instead direct customers to their website, email and phone lines for one-on-one conversations, while also increasing the emphasis on influencer marketing over social. The company had a statement, according to The Drum, which read in part, "Increasingly, social media is making it harder and harder for us to talk to each other directly. We are tired of fighting with algorithms, and we do not want to pay to appear in your newsfeed. So, we've decided it's time to bid farewell to some of our social channels." Lush, this is Lush in the UK. It has more than half a million followers on Instagram, half a million almost on Facebook, over 200,000 on Twitter. So it's not an insignificant audience to effectively been cutting off. Well, part of what has been driving the Lush decision is something I think we're seeing more broadly in the marketing world. There's a growing focus on something called earned media. This is the word of mouth promotion that isn't paid for. It's often taking place in social media platforms anyway. These are your influencers, whether they're self-described or
otherwise. Well, that is still, mostly influencers are paid. I mean, that's perhaps not true.
Influencers are, but earned media is not, and that's the key thing here.
But is earned media triggered by influencers?
It can. Well, yes.
I mean, that what they're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I did some research about this actually a few months ago because I was reporting on something related to it. And in 2018, there was a social media management service called Hopper HQ, which estimated that a single paid post by TV personality Kylie Jenner, who I'd never heard of until I was writing about this, but apparently she's quite famous.
Well, I mean, depends how you define fame.
People know who she is. Well, put it this way. On her Instagram account, this one post cost as much as $1 million, and that was up from $400,000 a year earlier. So that generates loads of conversation around a product, and that's really good for business. So why wouldn't you want to put more effort into generating that sort of thing instead of replying to inane comments on social media?
Because influencers are often don't have as much engagement as people think. I mean, influencer content is very susceptible to fake bots and, you know, things like that, because if you have to have a certain amount of followers. I mean, I don't know what Kylie Jenner has. It's millions of followers.
Yes, I would imagine so.
But I assume that a good percentage of them are not real.
No, they won't be.
And therefore your yield from it is not great. But of course, with someone who is a personality like that, you can be sure that mentioning a brand will elevate that brand substantially.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you don't need many. I mean, I've got about 16,000 followers on Twitter, and I've had people asking me to say something for money.
Really?
All of which I say no to.
Well, of course you do, because you're a journalist, and it would be completely inappropriate for a journalist to take money for Twitter.
But I was curious about the Lush one in particular, because I wanted to see the kind of, you know, the kind of comments that maybe they were sick of having to trawl through on social media. Because we've seen these. You go into a train company and it's just a lot of people whinging, saying they're the worst things in the world. So I went onto their Twitter to find some examples of, you know, what was going on. And it was really hard to find any horrible ones.
Really?
There was one, yeah, there was one demanding that their store in Saudi Arabia be closed because every 10 minutes in Yemen, a child dies of starvation.
Okay.
But other than that, it was mostly respectful questions or apologies for minor issues or something about an annoying staff member or someone's bath bomb making their testicles tingle, perhaps. But I just wondered if actually they just couldn't be bothered anymore. Like if it was more valuable for them to pay, to put the money that they were paying to like a social media manager role to a bunch of people who could generate natural, organic mentions, positive or otherwise.
I think it would be more cost effective for Lush to send free products to Twitter users who have an engaged following, but who are not necessarily the biggest. So I would probably guess that your sweet spot would be somewhere between 10 and 100,000 followers. People who, you know, probably would ask for money at some point, but you know, you could send them a free thing and they might mention it. I would say that's probably a more effective thing than paying someone, you know, a social media manager salary every year and getting varying results, perhaps not great, because I can see the logic by saying it means more coming earned media coming from normal people. So yes, I can see that.
But it's still a big brand saying we're not going to do this anymore. And they're not the first, but they're one that seems to have a really engaged, broadly pretty positive presence. Great replies from the staff. You know, a lot of praise and interesting photos and posts and things from their customers. It just seemed like a very, very odd decision to say we're not going to do this anymore. And that's it. And the other thing as well, of course, is that I don't know how common knowledge this is, but if you find a brand on Facebook or, you know, any social account, like pretty much all of them are run by either their PR team or their marketing team. And it's essentially the honeypot to trap the wasp of complaints, because they'd rather you go and whinge on their Facebook page than to write into a local tabloid that, you know, a mouse was baked into your bread loaf, which has happened, and you getting £300. It'd be far easier for them to send you a big basket of bread or another alliterated denomination of food produce. No, I can't be bothered trying to think of one. Than it is, you know, to defend a PR nightmare. So again, another strange reason for a brand to pull out of Twitter. But there we go. And not just Twitter, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. That's a lot of people. That's the best part. That's probably over a million people across those platforms. Very strange. If you have any thoughts on this, do let us know, obviously. We're still on Twitter. We're at TextMessagePod on Twitter. Maybe you can tweet us with your views or send them to the old snail mail. You can slither that message to hello@techpodcast.uk. Ian, we've been banging on for a while, but I don't want to finish our news segment without talking about something that isn't entirely news and is entirely, in fact, a rant.
Uh-huh.
I have recently come to the conclusion that it has never been less enjoyable to browse the web in Britain.
I was just having this conversation with someone on Twitter yesterday, so do carry on. Tell me your thoughts.
If you go to a website, and our American listeners or anyone outside Europe won't really have experienced this unless you've visited Britain, any website you go to now, you load up, and the first thing you get is a big full-page overlay. We value your privacy, you know, with some button. I accept. Show cookie purposes. And then you have to click those, or you go to Engadget, and it's like, Engadget is part of Oath. Do you accept? It's like, yes, I accept. I accepted the last time, and I accepted on my tablet this morning, and I accepted on the phone yesterday evening. I accept. Give me the content, please. Then you've got the Then you've got the cookies warning. This site uses cookies, you know,
which they all do because it's impossible to run a site without using cookies of some kind.
Yeah,
well, it's not impossible, but no one does it.
And then on top of that, you've got the obligatory subscribe to our newsletter pop-ups and all this kind of stuff. And I've actually come to the conclusion that the ads on websites now are the least annoying, least intrusive part of browsing the web in the UK.
Yeah.
And more broadly in Europe as well. You know, it's worse if you're talking about porn, because then, of course, you've got age gates to deal with as well.
Yeah.
But I just, it's definitely directly contributed to me wanting and actively have been subscribing and paying for more services, for news in apps. You know, something that back in the day I really never wanted to do, because I really hated and resented the pop-ups you get that says, hey, please open this app, this website in our app. It's like, I don't want to. I've come to your website. It's like when you're on hold on one of those telephone support lines and you're waiting for a customer service person. They said, have you visited our website for answers? Of course I have. That's why I'm calling you, because it's the last resort, because your website didn't have the answer to the inanely specific...
No one wants to pick up the phone when they can search the internet instead. We're all checking the internet before we pick up the phone. That is absolutely guaranteed.
Yeah, that's why I hate Home Assistant, because the... You know, those you know, menus are like phone menu trees. I don't want to have a phone menu tree on my insert product name, insert voice assistant here product, because it's annoying. It's why self-service checkouts are annoying. Anyway, I don't know what my point is. My point is that this is really annoying, and our American listeners, you have no idea how good you have it only having annoying ads now.
I'm not sure that they do have it. I mean, they do definitely have it better, but I'm not sure they have it that much better. I'll give you an example.
Go on.
The things that I find annoying are sign up to our newsletter, which is on literally every site now.
Yeah.
The thing that detects when your mouse goes towards the top of the screen and says,
please,
before you go, that
I had that today.
Infuriates me.
Often on retail.
I mean, in fact, if I see that one, I'm probably going to shut the window, you know, just out of sheer spite.
Yeah.
What's the other one that gets me?
Well, the chat room says video autoplay windows that follow you down the page.
Yeah, I mean, look, the problem is for journalists that a lot of us have written for sites that do that. And a lot of us, me included, have made videos that might follow you down a site. But I'm all for these things being done better. And you can block out some of them, but you can't block out the newsletter pop-ups and the, you know, the cookie consent thing. And, you know, I noticed that when you log onto the Wi-Fi here, you get the company page appears, but you also get a full page of like consent for cookies, which is great because it's done well, because it gives you the option to fully control the experience. Like, it's honest and that's good, but you still have to contend with that as the first thing you see when you visit the site or, you know, have Wi-Fi. It is. I have been thinking this for a very long time, and I know that it is not the best when we completely agree on a subject, but I completely agree. I'm finding the internet to be an absolutely dismal place.
I tell you what, I just love... I've been using Apple News a lot more recently.
Well, actually, I was...
Because of this.
Just about to say that same thing. There's been a lot of criticism about Apple and the rate that it's going to be giving publishers. However, I believe that Apple News will probably pay publishers more than they get in ad revenue from display advertising.
Mm. I think it depends on the publication.
Well,
I know the point you're trying to make.
A lot of publications are not making huge amounts of money out of display advertising.
No, true.
You know, and display advertising is going away. That's not how sites are going to make money. But my point is this. Half of the sites I go to are as you describe. I don't actively block ads, but some of the privacy tools I've installed in Firefox mean that sites detect are unable to display certain adverts.
I know Tom Merritt uses, I think it's Privacy Badger.
I think he
has a similar experience.
He'll
probably tell me.
Well, I use the Firefox built-in thing.
Listening to this, yeah.
And Ghostery.
Oh, Ghostery is very good, yeah.
Yes, but it also has the impact that the site detects that you're ad blocking. Which is not strictly speaking true. But anyway.
I don't use any of them. I don't use any ad blockers.
So my internet experience is now either site festooned with pop-up windows, site that refuses to let me see the site because I've apparently got an ad blocker, although that's not my intention. I'm not trying to block ads. Or a paywall. And so for me...
Paywalls are the least annoying. I have no objection to paywalls.
They are, but I object to paywalls in that...
Anymore.
Well... Yeah.
No. Because
but I object only to the fact that I do not know how I would be expected to afford paywalls for every site when what I'm doing usually is reading one article a month.
Yeah, but this
is where Apple News comes in.
Yeah,
because if I have an Apple News subscription and I can, even if it was like five articles on each site a month included or whatever, that would solve the majority of my internet browsing issues. I'm thinking that the web is becoming a very two-tier system, in that if you've got money, you can subscribe to the services and get access to the good news, the reliable news sources and the good journalism. And if you don't have the money for it, then you're going to be stuck with the crappy web and all of its annoying crappy pop-ups.
I mean, you're right that trial system does work, and a lot of things do ask you to just register a free account or log in, and that, along with having a paid subscription, does mean that they do know who you are and they do know that you've given consent.
Yes.
But the problem is you then need to be always logged in on all of those devices. And if you log out, you have to get through that in order to get to the login in the first place. But it does make it slightly better. But no one likes being annoyed into taking an action, do they?
No, they don't.
I mean, least of all you, mate.
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing. I mean, I suppose it's been chipping away. It's been, you know, first we had the cookie consent. Now, we all know where I stand on the EU. But like a lot of people who like the EU, I do not like everything the EU does. And that cookie thing was perhaps the most misguided ruling of all time. Maybe not, but it was certainly a misguided ruling. It doesn't solve a problem. It doesn't help anyone. It doesn't make anything better. Mm. All it does is provide a window that you have to clear that says you consent to cookies. No one is thinking in any detail about that decision. They just want to get rid of the box.
I feel suitably becalmed now, Ian, having had my little rant.
Oh, I do. There is one other thing that I've also encountered.
Go on.
Which is that a percentage of sites, and it is a reasonable percentage of sites, now will not operate in the EU because of GDPR. So some percentage of the sites that you go to that are not behind a paywall and not festooned with stuff are in fact inaccessible because they can't be bothered to do the GDPR thing.
It's often not that they can't be bothered, it's just that it's not financially worthwhile the bothering. Let us know any opinions you have on our opinions. hello@techpodcast.uk. We've had a bunch of emails, but we're running long today, so we're just going to get to one, and it's from Jamie. He says, Hi, Nate. Quick note to say thanks for continuing to produce the podcast, and in response to the recent changes, I'm a recent subscriber, on Patreon, he means. Been listening to the free tier for a while, having heard you mention it whilst on This Week in Tech with Leo. I've bumped up to the $3 tier, generally enjoy the off-topic bits and the personal ramblings as much as the core content, so hoping there'll be more of this in the extra recordings. Yes, there certainly are. Particularly if you want to hear about, what was it I was talking about, an extra message? Oh, the motorized bar stool.
Yeah, that was a good story. And also there'll be 10 minutes of additional footage in this for the $3 tier, which is us eating confectionery.
No, that will get...
that will
will get cut out. No, we had a very long discussion about Google having to offer alternative browsers to mobile users in Europe. That was in the Patreon extended version.
Yes.
But thank you, Jamie. He also says, as a home worker, I miss the social interactions in the office and find the podcasts I listen to help fill some of that. Well, thank you. I'm glad we can fill something for you.
Amen from a fellow home worker.
Yeah. And as a pure coincidence to this, I'm going to be on This Week in Tech on Sunday with Leo Laporte. So that's completely coincidental that your email came in several days.
So much Nate this week, if you want access to all the Nate.
Yeah, it's a natural disaster if you don't like my voice, particularly since I'm still recovering from my lung illness and coughing up like...
you're quite husky. That's not a bad thing.
My sticky, sticky shoes. I should be a jazz singer. Shouldn't really play the drums. Text message, of course, keeps you informed about the British. tech landscape, but let's check in with our good friends, Daily Tech News Show in the US, and hear what's been happening in the wider world of technology this week. Tom!
This week on Daily Tech News Show, we talk about who won the battle between Qualcomm and Apple over their patent licensing, and it turns out both of them kind of did, but there is a loser. We also follow the crumbling Samsung Galaxy Fold review units. When is it human error? When is it not? And what's Samsung's response? And we get to the bottom of why the Mueller report was delivered on CD-ROM. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Thank you very much, Tom Merritt. I have a funny feeling he might be in Dublin in August. Mm. He said something on Twitter. And if he is, I might go to Dublin in August and see him.
Sounds like a plan. I've never been to Dublin.
Yes.
It's a delight.
They're saying, Stephen says, thanks, Tom, in the Discord, in our live chat room. So everything's lining up. Everything's coming up. Tom, I also should point out, just as a little side note, congratulations to a gaming podcast called Tales of Tamriel, which just had its 200th episode, and it did so on the Elder Scrolls Online's 5th anniversary. As some people will know, I do co-host occasionally the Tales of Tamriel podcast.
I was going to say, this is your podcast. Well, I mean, it's not your podcast so much as
it's not
you're
my
involved in it.
I can take no credit for
it. I have met the people. That was the people who were over.
Yes, you have met them. And we do. I mean, as people know, I'm an obsessive Elder Scrolls fanatic. I sometimes play the Elder Scrolls while I'm playing the Elder Scrolls. So the other day,
Yo, dog, I hear you like the Elder Scrolls, so I put the Elder Scrolls in your
I know what it was. I was playing the Elder Scrolls online, but I was waiting for some people to join my group. So while I was waiting, I was playing the Elder Scrolls Legends on my Elder Scrolls Blades on my iPad, which just came out. Anyway,
you're a geek.
I'm a massive nerd about this, but I love that show. I've been on it for several years, and congratulations to those guys, because hitting 200 episodes of a podcast is difficult.
Pretty good. I mean, we're only on 165.
Exactly. So big congrats for not pod fading to Agelos and everyone over there. Thank you, of course, we've already said to Tom, and thank you to our patrons supporting us every week. If you want to get hold of our extended version and the extra episodes, extra message, the first episode of that went out this week, among a bunch of other things. You'll have seen the postings in, on the blog, on Twitter, and in the RSS feed. There's a little explanation about them, so I'm not going to go over them again. But we'd love to hear from you if you're tempted by any of those, and what we can offer you to make the experience better. That's all at patreon.com/UK Tech.
Yes, and also we welcome your comments via the usual route. It's hello@techpodcast.uk. You can also follow us on Twitter, where we post lots of up-to-date news stories that are relevant and may well get discussed in the show. That's @textmessagepod. Also, thanks to everyone listening to us on our free ad-supported feed. If you've a minute to leave a review on iTunes, it's the best way of supporting us without spending a single penny.
It really is. That should be, when there's when a house is burning down.
Yes.
You dial 999.
Yes.
That's your first thing.
Yeah.
That's the first thing people should do. People should never, ever start listening to this show at the Patreon, ever. Everyone should be on the free version. Listen to it for a while, enjoy it. If you like it, move up. But in the process, and if you like us, leave us a review. That's what the user journey should always
be. Solid advice.
Should always
Although
be.
We're not going to tell you, you absolutely can't just jump in and subscribe to Patreon, but also, how would you know that we were saying that? Because you wouldn't have listened to the show.
I don't know why.
Tying ourselves up in knots here.
Enjoy the free version. If you like it and want more, move to Patreon. But thank you to everyone, however you support us. From me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
I'll see you in 1 week.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.